I'm Amy Halpern-Laff.
And I'm John Moskow. Today, we have another recording from our collaborative project, Educating for the World We Want. Today's episode features speakers from the Fourth Salon, focused on Learning to Citizen, Tales of Youth Voices, Agency, and Care. The speakers were Benjamin Freud, head of upper school, and two students, Scarlett Ganella and Manon Tianj, from the Green School, Bali. The first voice you'll hear will be that of Juan Mora, introducing the speakers.
Welcome. So in our first series, we kept returning to a question about what does it mean to learn in relationship with place, with nature, and with each other. And we heard stories from Argentina and India that showed us what shifts when education grows from context and trust instead of merely content delivery. And we learned that education stops being something we transmit to become something we actually live. And I would add that we live together in relationship. So this new series builds on that foundation and takes up a vital invocation from educator Deb Morrison to meet agency where it lives. We begin with what people care about and then the places they inhabit. And so today, and on May 30th, for the next session, we are here to honor learners and teachers who already are doing the work of practicing care, enacting citizenship, and learning how to regenerate their worlds. And we're particularly grateful today for our friends and students at Green School Bali. So we're very grateful. Grateful to Benjamin, who is the head of the upper school. That's the middle and high school, and strategic lead regenerative education at Green School Bali, and two of his bright students, Manon and Scarlett. Welcome. Benjamin, perhaps you can quickly introduce the Green School Bali, as well as Manon and Scarlett.
Thank you. Thanks so much. It's always difficult to introduce the Green School Bali. I'm Benjamin, as Juan mentioned. I'm the head of upper school, and I'm also very lucky to be teaching the or guiding the Greenstone program, which is our two-year capstone that goes from a grade 11 and grade 12. And Scarlett and Manal are both grade 12 students. And because it's such a rich, beautiful, wonderful place, Green School, I always try to think about a story that happened to me today when I talk about it. And Green School is a school that's made of bamboo, and you know, it's got roofs that are also made of organic materials. And you should be able to take the entire structure of the school and put it in the earth, and it gets composted. It's a school that doesn't have any rubbish bins. It only has recycling. And the point is not to have any recycling bins that are full, because we don't even want to bring anything on campus. So there's a lot of sustainability that's there, but actually that's not really important in many ways, because it's about the learning, and it's about the experience of the young people. That's where it makes a difference, because a bank could also be made of bamboo, but this is a place of learning. And so what happened to me today was the national principal, the high school national principal, who's doing her PhD, is working, and she asked me today, what performance metrics do you use in order to assess the school? And we don't have that. We don't have SATs like in the UK. We don't have IB results. We don't have placements or anything like that. We don't work on those quantitative measures. And assessment, even for students, doesn't really happen in terms of like trying to think about ways to measure international or whatever like that. That doesn't seem to matter, because we've taken this program, the entire program, to a place where the learning and the quality of learning matters based on what the students do with it and how they contribute to community. Actually, it's about the voices of those who have, I'm using the word benefit in a very loose way, but who have been touched by the programs, but have been touched by the projects. That's really when we know that the learning and the doing come together into something that's meaningful. And so we don't talk about performance. We talk about not even impact, but really contribution to community. So the Greenstone program is a two-year program where the students go deep into a subject. They know a lot about it. They become experts in it. But really, it's put in service of others in the community, human and other than human. So Scarlett is working on a project, which she'll tell you about, in terms of working with clean water, which is a problem across the world and certainly in Indonesia and Bali. And Manon, as she will mention, will bring in her creative side, her own story, but really as a means to channel the story of others, of invisible labor. And so it's been such a privilege, and I'm so excited to have worked with these two young women who have really shown dedication and heart and really done something that is not about trying to show what they do and how much they know, but rather do something for others. And I think that's absolutely beautiful.
Great. Thanks so much, Benjamin. And so I'd like to pass it on to Manon and Charlotte and give them a choice. Who would like to present first?
I don't mind going first.
Okay. All right. Great. Over to you, Scarlett.
So I'll just start by giving like a one sentence of what my project is. It basically addresses the connection between access to safe drinking water and plastic pollution in Indonesia. So to give some context, I grew up in England and I completed my GCSEs, which are your final exams, in year 11 or grade 10. And I moved to Green School Bali at the beginning of grade 11. And it kind of felt like by the time I got there, any passions or interests kind of felt like they'd been stripped away by revision or homework or just having to keep up with exams. So when I got to grade 11, I had a little bit of an issue on figuring out what I wanted to do for my project, since Greenstone is a passion project. So I figured out that I wasn't going to just wait for some interest or some passion to come along. Felt like that would take a bit too long. So I ended up speaking with John Hardy, who is the founder of Green School Bali. And he mentioned to me an issue that surrounded plastic waste from a company called Aqua, which is it supplies a lot of the drinking water in Indonesia. And that's really where the initial idea for my project began, about access to safe drinking water. So the first thing I did in my project was deciding to build a recharge well. If you don't know what that is, it's basically a well that replenishes groundwater in the events of flooding or heavy rainfall. And in Bali, it's often pumped up for access to water. So you filter it and then they drink it. But the reason I built this in Bali in particular is because there's a large issue on groundwater scarcity due to overextraction, often from tourism. And it means that the reliable option for access to water is often taken away since people, it's dried up, the well is dried up and they can't do it. So they often turn to plastic, which obviously is a huge issue here. So as I progressed through my project, I didn't want to just stick to one recharge well. I kind of started realizing that I didn't want to just have a one-time solution for something. So I ended up trying to think of a way to make a more long-lasting impact. And that led me to writing a petition, which was a call to action for access to safe drinking water in Indonesia, since I thought the best way to try and help this huge issue of access to safe drinking water is not by just that one recharge well, but trying to make a bigger difference at a higher level. And then I came to another issue, which was basically that I felt like I wasn't really getting hands-on enough with my project. So I thought back to a service trip I took in grade 11, which was to a remote school in Lombok. And it was a really small Islamic school, which was very poor. There was about 60 students and it was high up in the mountains. And I remember when we arrived, we took a visit to their watering hole. And it basically turned out to be just a hole in the ground that they pumped water out of. And that was where they got everything from drinking water to cleaning and using for the bathroom and for everything. And it really shocked me. And it kind of made me realize that everything in my petition was, there was a real like meaning for it. And in the meantime of doing this, I had heard of a company in Colombia called Eco Group H2O. And they basically install rainwater harvesting systems built out of recycled plastic bottles. And it provides access to safe drinking water because there's a filter. So it bypasses any need for plastic. And I reached out to them on LinkedIn and also through email. They didn't reply for a long time, But then they actually did about 3 months later in about January. And they said they'd be super interested in collaborating with my project. And this was like huge deal because they were like a Global Citizens Prize winner in like 2021 or something. And yeah, they said that they wanted to do a partnership with me. So what ended up happening is I reached out to the local school in Lombok and I said, I'd be really interested in coming back and doing part of my Greenstone project at your school. So me, my mom, and my two sisters in April of this year went back to Lombok and we built a rainwater harvesting system in partnership with Eco Group H2O. And we basically provided the whole school community with access to safe drinking water because I remember from the watering hole they had, that was a huge issue at the school since that well also often dries up. So in dry season, they all have to get plastic bottles. That's the only way they could access drinking water. For the last part of my project, my project has kind of been a bit of a journey, a process. I didn't have all these ideas at the same time. They kind of just all flowed from the next one. And the next part comes to education. And when I was in the school, we did some activities with the students. We were there for a week, so we did some educational things on plastic waste and what it means to have access to safe drinking water. And I remember asking one of the students a question on how long do you think it takes for a plastic to biodegrade? Because the norm there was to just throw their plastic waste in the ground and do nothing with it. And they said, oh, maybe 3 days. So I knew from that answer that education was really like, it's the one thing that you can do to change a whole generation of knowledge. So the next part that I did is I talked to my mom for some context. She owns a company in the UK that works on educational courses for training. And she has a collaboration with a partnership with NOCN, which is an international awarding organization. So through speaking with her, we decided to develop a course on plastic waste. And basically there's two main goals for the course. One is to educate people on plastic waste and everything surrounding that, on what it is, how the microplastics and everything. And then the second part is all the profit from selling that course goes to a company called Plastic Bank, which is an international company that is a plastic workforce. So they have collectors that collect plastic and then they turn that plastic waste into pellets and then they sell it off. So all the profit from the course will go to Plastic Bank to like upskill their workforce. So there's more plastic collectors, meaning more plastic out of the environment. Yeah, so basically my whole project was a long process and it was all just like one thing to the next thing to the next thing to the next thing. Nothing was like too simultaneous and it was all evolving as I went through. So yeah.
That was amazing. Thank you so much, Scarlett. Manon, you're up next.
Okay, so hi everyone. My name is Manon, and my Greenstone project is called Who Makes Your World? And I am structurally exploring labor invisibility and the informal work sector in Bali. To give a little bit of context on my whole Greenstone journey, I think it was in term two, so January of last year, I had actually started on another project and then halfway through decided, or more like realized, that there were a lot more safety risks involved. And so it quickly evolved into this when I realized one day how little we interact as students and as teachers with the local staff at school, whether that's the gardeners, cleaners. We just never really interacted with them unless it was, oh, a bamboo branch fell, or, oh no, a student dropped their glass. Can you please come help clean it up? And so that's really where my project started. So to give a little bit of background, as I've continued exploring and researching this topic, come to the realization that labor invisibility in Bali is not accidental, and it is produced through systems like economy, law and policy, culture and gender, post-colonial systems, and these all work together to make certain people's work unappreciated and just completely disappear from the view of everyone around. So, one of the biggest questions that my project asks is what patterns built invisibility and how can we make it seen? To get a little bit of background context, Bali's workforce consists of 2.74 million people, and around 60%, so around 1.6 million of these workers work informally, sustaining a $10 billion tourism industry without recognition. So that means without written contracts, no union protections, and no social security, which also means no health protection, no job protection. If, for example, an employee is abused or harassed at work, there is no legal framework there to protect them. Okay, so before I start ranting a little bit too much, I'm going to break down what my project consists of. So the first part obviously is research. I've been doing a lot of research on the history of Bali and Indonesia as a whole, as well as economic systems, been studying up lots on law, and I'm currently in contact with the World Resource Institute, the Jakarta branch, and also LBH Bali, which is a nonprofit organization in Bali that offers free legal aid to marginalized communities. And then the second part is interviews. I've been going around Bali interviewing lots of different people, some that I know extremely well and some that I don't, just to understand what makes their life what it is and to further explore how all of these systems affect them. So the third part, it still exists, but has changed a little bit. My original project was to turn all of these interviews and lived narratives into classical piano compositions as a way to translate this data and these statistics into something emotional and something that people could actually feel. However, that has shifted a little bit. While that is still going on, I am also hosting two workshops, which I think I'll explain in a little bit. So these are the six systems that I am working with. I don't know if I have much time really to go in detail, but the further and the more I've explored this, the more I've realized how it is all interconnected. For example, for colonial narratives, there is this term, it's called balisering policies. And it's basically a policy that was created during the 1930s, during the Dutch colonial era. And it was all about keeping Bali as a living museum. And so all the workers were kind of just landscapers that were never acknowledged or seen by anyone else. And as a country that has tried to move away from the Dutch colonial era and that was very nationalist, this was something that was really surprising to me that these kind of policies still exist. And I don't know. Yeah, I'm just not going to go into too much detail and then you guys can ask
You
questions
do
later
have
on.
around 4 minutes left,
Okay,
so.
okay. I'll keep going then. So this is how it's broken down. My two mind maps, one of them is shown in the image on the left, and it's a workshop that I led last Friday where students use the analogy of a solar system to map labor invisibility. So the sun was labor invisibility, and all of the planets around it were the different categories that I've been exploring myself and representing how they orbit around it and affect them. So all the students in groups were asked to paint their planet depending on how they thought that it should be represented. For example, someone drew economy as a fire, with trash all around it, kind of as a symbolism of the destruction that it can cause. And so the next part, as I mentioned earlier, were these worker interviews. And then I've been working with one of my teachers, Ibu Penny, and she's my Balinese collaborator. And so she kind of reviews all of my information that I'm receiving, reviews how I'm framing sentences, what I can say, what I cannot say, and what would be viewed as offensive or inoffensive. So for this, I've also been planning a second workshop that will be happening with parents later on. And it's basically, it'll be something like this. This is one of my images, and it will be on big pieces of paper where, in groups, parents will by themselves map labor and visibility and find all of these interconnections. So this workshop is mostly about understanding what it is, as well as our place in it, and how we can change that, whether that's a small thing like having a contact somewhere, talking to someone, donating money, asking your pimbuntu, who is like a house cleaner, kind of, if she has, social security, if she has health insurance, can you provide that? There's just so much that we can do as individuals. So this parent workshop is really about encouraging them and trying to help them to see all of these blind spots. So some
Manon,
these
I
are some
think
of
we
the
have one more minute.
Okay, so I won't explain too much about this, but these are some of the key facts that I wanted to highlight because I think they are, well, the most important and really kind of show and emphasize how all of these are interconnected, like gender and culture and balisering, and how did these Dutch policies connect with maybe the gender norms now? And so there's lots of different things to explore. And so these are kind of the steps that I've been working on, and the parent workshop will be coming in the coming weeks, as well as a website where all my information and my music will be available, and a little black book, which I am handing down to a student in 10th grade, which will include all my statistics, information, data, contacts, everything, so that they can pass this on and hopefully bring this up to government, because I truly believe that the only way to truly make change is, through structural reform and policy making. Thank you.
Wow, thank you so much, both Scarlett and Manon. You have given me so much hope for the future. It's amazing. I feel so much better. Superbly inspiring. And so I'd like to ask you both a question after seeing this amazing work that you were able to create, that you're passionate about. What was the support that Green School gave you in order to find your voice and connect your interests and passions in the real world? Right? This is not theoretical. So, what was the support that the Green School gave you?
I would say, really, when you start Greenstone in grade 11, you really are given the choice to do your project on literally anything you want. I mean, you can do it on your passions, your interests, on anything that you think is worthwhile. And they really like support you and help you brainstorm ideas, especially when I came in grade 11, I didn't really know what to do for a long time. And it was through speaking to teachers all the time that it gave me like ideas on what to do. And especially now with my teachers, they're always there to support you and reassure you when you're struggling or you think that your project's not doing too well or anything. And they really just they keep pushing you to do better and try and just like not give up. So I would say just the support from all the teachers is all you need.
Thanks, Scarlett. Manon?
Yeah, to add on to what Scarlett said, I think it's kind of this unconditional and like never-ending encouragement that we get from all of our teachers, not necessarily only our Greenstone teachers. I think in 1.5 years, I've never once felt judged or stupid or weird for changing my project so many times, because obviously they do understand that that's just how it works. But they've always been there to deepen our understanding, ask better questions. And so I do think it's that kind of never-ending support that has allowed us to grow so much.
Great, thank you. And that's about, it's amazing that you have this support to produce these projects and impact the communities that you live in. But I want to ask, is there something that you learned about yourself and what you feel by going through this process at the Green School?
I would say for what I've learned about myself since coming to Green School, I mean, obviously, I said that I didn't have a passion with my project. And at the start, I was like kind of embarrassed and like, oh my God, I don't have a passion. Like everyone loves surfing or they love music or all these things. But I was like, it doesn't matter that I don't have one specific thing, as long as I try hard and I try make an impact with my project. I think that is kind of where the love for my project comes now. It allowed me to see that I don't need to have one specific passion. As long as I try hard and do something worthwhile, that's enough.
Great, thank you.
I guess for me, it was a lot more about the topic that I was exploring itself. So throughout all of this time where I was, switching and changing up my project, I realized that basically the one thread that was connecting everything was this interest in studying policy and in structural reform and policy as a way to make positive change. So that is, I guess, one of the biggest revelations that I had this year and is what I'm going to study next so that I can come back here and actually work on this with, a degree and knowledge and research to back me up. So that is something that I learned a lot about.
Great. Thank you so much.
This is so interesting and so inspiring to hear. Ben, I'm going to bring it to you now just to hear your perspective. So many of us are educators and educational change makers, and I know we share the excitement and the hope to know that education can change. Could you share a little bit about how you at the Green School Valley create opportunities within the curriculum and the practices and the cultures of the school to allow for such experiences to flourish?
Yeah, sure. And we're very lucky that we aren't tied to a national curriculum or to national expectations. We are able to work within our structure. So in the IB, you still have to have exams. We don't have that. We look like an American school. We have credits, same Carnegie credits as everybody else, but it's what we do behind the scenes that really matters. And really, for a project like this, it is the culmination of the Green School experience. So I saw there was a chat, what do the other grades look like? Well, in grade five, there's a Footprints, which is their capstone. In grade eight, there's Quest, it's their capstone. And this year, we'll even have a kindergarten capstone. So it's throughout the experience that they just, we cultivate a culture where students were able to advocate, they say things, we encourage, we listen. We have a student association where they design policies. So throughout the experience, they're able to participate in the shaping of the community and shaping of the school. And when you're a young person who feels that you're actually not just like, I don't like this expression, student voice. It means nothing to me because student voice doesn't matter if no one's listening. And when Malcolm X said, you can be at the table, but it doesn't matter unless you're a diner, that's kind of how we see it. So we just really cultivate those experiences. And then when it comes to the Greenstone time, we say, look, it's not about you. Like even passion projects or words that I don't like, is it's not about you. It's about like, how do you show up and how do you participate and how do you create space within a community, whatever that might be, in order to make it a better place, make other lives, improved. So it's really a tightrope for me. because on the one hand, I have to support, like they say, but on the other hand, I have to have really high expectations and I have to say that's not going to cut it. That's not actually what this community needs. This is not about, doing little things. Like we have a role to play here and stories to tell, and you are capable and able to rise to the occasion. So the culture starts very early on, and I think that any school, no matter what they're tied to, can't start to flatten hierarchies and start talking to young people like they're actually like human beings. And it starts with, taking that oak desk and getting rid of it and sitting with the students in a circle in your classroom. It starts with, inviting them to actually create policies, and it starts with giving them the confidence to say, I can do whatever. And that's when you start to have projects that are amazing because they know they can, because they've been advocating for years and they know that their participation matters.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so great questions in the chat. And the first one that we picked is from Leticia. And Leticia asks, would love to hear how different students connect to one another during their learning journeys, and how does the community support their learnings? So, this idea of connected learning, what a great question. From your perspective, Manon, or Ben's perspective, or Scarlett's perspective.
I think as a grade, over the past few months, we've kind of just taken inspiration from each other. For example, my friend Haruto, he's also creating a systems map, but on a completely different topic, and he's exploring surfing and the surf industry. So I think that all of our projects kind of help each of us individually to get inspired by certain aspects. Or just, getting new contacts, getting new ideas, because we are so many people, there's so many different perspectives. And so every single person we talk to, we kind of hear a different thought from. So, yeah, I think that helps us a lot.
I'm going to jump in from a little bit behind the scenes very quickly. We do things like we launch these projects. We try to bring everybody together. We say that it's part of the experience. If it's the culmination, then it becomes something. I mean, this is a whole class, right? It's not something that we do on the side. So we have a lot of opportunities to come together. And of course, we go like field trips and we go on retreats and things like that. And that's all very good for bonding. But really, really what it's about is just making sure that everybody shows up and just the culture of really supporting everybody's kind of in the same boat. It's absolutely amazing when some of them struggle, how others kind of lift them up and carry them. And it's just that culture that happens because they feel like they're in it together. And it's also other events. We do events like, the whole thing finishes with a celebration. It's like a 17 or 20-minute talk in front of 500 people at the school. And that's quite intimidating, but all through it, we have these little talks like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes that really builds up for those skills. But because that's such a pressureful situation, there's so many opportunities throughout the 2 years to come together, support each other, clap, listen to one another, show up, that it's just a beautiful culture. And now what we're doing more and more, and Manon talked about this already a little bit, is working with, not just horizontally, but vertically, where the grade 12s work with grade 11s, with grade 10s, work with grade 8s and hand off their projects so that they're not things that just disappear. Sustainability part means that they're going to keep on and somebody else takes them and takes them in another direction, grows them, and makes it their own.
Great, thank you so much. I'm going to quickly move on to the second question from Stephen in the chat. Stephen says, I'm curious about intercultural encounters and how the voice and participation of the community in Lombok was approached. And so I guess, Scarlett, that's for you.
Yes, that would be me. I worked with an NGO when we went there. That was the contact I had, and they work with the school. And I would say the community, I mean, obviously there was a language barrier, but it was probably one of the best trips I've ever been on. The children there are so sweet. They were so welcoming and they wanted to participate so much. And I think with the intercultural, like with the community, I think we went there to, I don't want to say help them, but to go as part of my project, but they also were helping me with my project. So I think it's just like a, like everyone helps each other. And obviously, they all speak Bahasa there. So the language barrier was quite difficult. But when You have the teachers that spoke English. There was only two of them that spoke English, but it kind of felt like the whole time that they were right there beside you helping us. And even though it was my project, it kind of felt like that they had just latched onto my project with me. And they were so kind and so helpful. And even when we were building the rainwater harvesting system, the principal of the school was like up the ladder drilling it. So everyone was quite hands-on and so helpful. So I don't think there's like any issue. It was like everyone was a friend. And it was also because I was returning. So I had been there before, and it was really nice to see some familiar faces with the kids.
This has been better than I expected, or more inspirational than I had imagined. So thank you so much for sharing your journeys with us. I would like to ask one more question to Manon and Scarlett. What advice would you give to other young people looking to find their voice and agency? And also, not just young people, but perhaps what advice would you give to people in general, no matter their age, to help young people find their voice and agency?
So I'll answer it in two parts. My advice to other young people would be to be bold and to be ambitious. I don't think that hurts anyone. I'm always way too ambitious and then I cut down from there. But I think that is so much better than putting limits on yourself and then just trying to fit that box. Then my advice to, was it everyone else or to older or
Yeah,
adults?
to so let's just say, just to make it clear, your teachers, educators, adults in your life.
I feel like it's quite hard in green school because they do so well to encourage us all. But I guess something would be kind of not to think of students as like stupid or inexperienced. I think that that's something that's very hurtful. And so my advice is to always encourage and never talk down because, like I said before, ambition is good unless you're like trying to take over the world. But ambition is good. And so I think teachers trying to cut down on that would do more harm than good.
Great. Thanks, Manon. Scarlett?
I'll just add on to what Manon was saying about students and teachers. I think this is one thing I had never experienced before with the student-teacher relationships at Green School. They're kind of like nothing I've seen before. There's more like friends and supporters mixed together. It's not teachers, then big gap below students. They were kind of on the same level, but also like respect and all that. But they really try to be on an equal level with you. And I think it pushes a student to want to engage more because they feel like they're not going to be shut down or just like disregarded if they come up with a point. And I think it's a huge thing to be able to speak your voice and not feel that fear of being pushed down or pushed away. So I would say that's my advice for teachers. Not that I'm an expert or anything, but I would say that, not thinking like you're better than students or more smart or anything. Yeah.
We co-sponsor Educating for the World We Want, a series of Saturday salons with three partners: Agastya International Foundation in India, the Center for Artistry and Scholarship in Argentina and the US, and Thinking with You in Spain and globally. Check out the website edfortheworldwewant.net for more information. Join us on May 30th, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, for the next salon in the Learning to Citizen series. will welcome Nando Rodriguez, Senior Manager for Environmental Programming at Brotherhood Sister Sol, and two student members of Brotherhood Sister Sol's composting program to discuss their environmental activism and community building experiences. If you found this podcast worthwhile, please share it with friends and colleagues. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a rating or review. This helps others to find the show. Check out our website, ethicalschools.org, for more episodes and videos and to subscribe to our monthly emails. We post annotated transcripts of our interviews to make them easy to use in workshops or classes. Contact us at hosts@ethicalschools.org. We're on Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and LinkedIn. Our editor and social media manager is Amanda Denshi. Until next time.